Read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The North Carolina General Assembly returned to Raleigh this past week for the 2024 short session, a session that figures to feature debates on a number of familiar topics, including public and higher education, an impending child care cliff, and funding for several state agencies that are struggling with staff attrition and vacancies. One lawmaker likely to be an especially knowledgeable and outspoken participant in these discussions is Mecklenburg County State Senator Natasha Marcus. During her 3 terms in Raleigh, Marcus has developed into one of the Senate's leading voices on an array of core issues, and recently I got a chance to sit down with her for an extended conversation. In part one of our chat, we discussed some of the issues at the top of the short session agenda, including the Republican plan to expand funding for school vouchers, even as traditional public schools struggle mightily with enormous needs. Well, Senator Natasha Marcus, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Rob, it's great to be here.
A busy, busy time in your life, obviously on lots of fronts, and perhaps right at the top of the list is the legislature. The General Assembly reconvenes this week for the annual short session, and we learned from economists that you all have $1 billion of budget revenue exceeding what we thought might be coming in. So that's a good thing. That's happened before, and maybe we haven't seen very productive uses of surpluses. Where would you like to see this extra money go that we're apparently going to be realizing?
Right. That is good news. We definitely have some needs that have gone unmet. So I'm hoping that the Republicans who are in charge of making these decisions in the end with their legislative supermajority will see that holding more and more money in reserves when there are so many needs going unmet is probably not the best way to invest in our state's future. In addition to the $1 billion more than what we expected, remember there's also a lot of money held back in the savings reserve as well. Use some of that money where it is needed. The taxpayers paid their taxes and they expect some investments in our state. So their priorities, it's really hard to list, but I would say among the top for me, and I think for fellow Democrats, is addressing the need to replace the money that we are losing from the federal government that was in the American Rescue Plan for childcare. This is a priority even for the North Carolina Chamber of Commerce because they understand that it is critical for our economy that parents have a safe place for their children to be while they are working. And if we don't do this, it's going to impact working mothers the most and, of course, their children. That has got to be near the top, and I hope it's going to be a bipartisan support for that. Child care, some people don't know, is just not affordable. It's not sustainable without some government investment. It's just too expensive. If people had to pay the actual going rate of what it costs to care for young children, almost no one could afford it. So we have to do something on that. There's also the perpetual need to address our teacher retention and recruitment problem. North Carolina had yet another record year with high turnover rates. Most teachers who are leaving the profession now are saying that they're doing it for a career change reason, meaning they're going to go do something else. In large part, I think that's due to the lack of pay. It's also due to lack of respect for the work that they do and the professionals that they are. But we are at least $12,000 less in teacher pay than the national average. And North Carolina is particularly bad on new teachers and the most veteran teachers who hit a plateau and they don't get a raise for years and years. So a 23-year experienced teacher in North Carolina gets $53,000, a little over that, whereas in South Carolina, they make over $75,000. Wow. So there's a huge need there. And then we heard just last week how much is needed at the State Board of Elections for them to conduct safe and secure and free elections for the people. We have a huge election coming up in November. And the funding is just not there. We need staff positions. We need updated IT. We need better voter education about all the changes in election law. But I will pause there.
I want to talk about elections. I want to talk about a lot of stuff. Before we leave education, the speaker, Tim Moore, who is, of course, running for Congress, and this is last year as speaker, is saying he wants $300 million more earmarked for private school vouchers. It seems a bit of a contrast to what you're saying probably would be a better use of our funds.
I cannot understand why the GOP supermajority is more focused on helping subsidize private school for the wealthiest North Carolinians. And let's be clear, that's who is not getting the full voucher GOP supermajority would like to give them. It's the wealth cases already paying for and sending their kids to private school. So for some reason, their need to be subsidized with their private school tuition is rising to the very top of priorities, according to Tim Moore and other Republicans that have talked about it. We should be using that money for public school education first. It's public taxpayer money, and it should go to public schools for not just the teacher pay that we need to address, but also the students. Per pupil spending is always too low in North Carolina, and public school kids are suffering as a result of it.
I want to go back now to elections, where in some ways we see sort of a similar pattern. We've lost, well, I'm going to get the number right here. We've seen 60 county elections directors leave office since 2019. That's a remarkable rate of turnover, which one would assume that has something to do with just the support we're providing to them and the stress of running elections in our state. It would seem that that's a big roadblock to making our elections work efficiently and effectively in this very hotly contested election.
It is a concern. In addition to the constant changes in election laws that Republicans seem to keep wanting to, you know, change how we do things, all the rules are different every time. So there's a lot of that. But also there's harassment, unfortunately. After Trump encouraged some of his followers to harass election workers, a lot of people just feel like, I'm not going to take that kind of abuse. And so we do have new people in place to run our elections. I'm confident we'll be able to get there, but not without the funding we need. So the State Board of Elections typically has regional field assistants who can go to the different county boards, especially those in rural counties that don't have a lot of staff. I understand there's at least one county that is down to maybe zero staff right now. Yeah. So the state board needs to assist those counties with how to run their elections. And we're down at least two positions in these regional field officers positions. So we got to at least fund that, given the lack of experience we have among many of our state's election directors this year. And also, as I mentioned, there's a huge need to update our computer system that we all rely on to keep up with voter registration rolls and run elections. And the chair of the state board described it as it looks a lot like the old Atari system compared to the current games that you can now play online. That's how old it is. And they are doing their very best. We've had very safe and secure elections up till now. But every year that we don't update it, it makes it harder and harder. And they're down at least $3 million in the request to update this computer system. So again, I would think that's a bipartisan priority that we have safe and secure elections. And as much as Republicans want to call that into question, I don't understand why they won't fund the basics that we need to have what we need to have safe and secure elections.
Especially when the money's there. The Pong system for running our elections doesn't seem like a very
Some of us are old enough to remember it. Yeah, it was fun, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah. We're talking with State Senator Natasha Marcus, who represents Mecklenburg County in the North Carolina General Assembly. Before we leave elections, I want to ask about voter ID. When Executive Director Bell testified recently, she talked about voter ID, and you made the point that we're not really sure who didn't vote and why. I mean, the numbers don't seem to have been hugely problematic, the people who were prevented from voting, or at least who were rejected from voting during the primary. But there were a lot of people who didn't get the vote, and the numbers might be a lot bigger in November unless we get a better handle on this, right?
Right. The concern, of course, is primary voters tend to be the most active, the ones that really follow elections and voting laws and are usually more ready to vote than a general election group of folks who maybe only vote once every 4 years when there's a presidential election. And they may not be aware of the changes. We're going to have, I would guess, a much higher percentage of people who show up without specific requirements for a voter ID. And of course, as I mentioned in that committee hearing, I know people didn't vote at all because they didn't have their ID. I met a woman in Alamance County when I was greeting voters at the polls there on primary day, who was running in toward the end of the day because she said, oh my gosh, I work in Durham, I live in Alamance, and I left my ID at work today. So I had to go back and get it and get back here so that I could vote. And there's a perfect example of someone who has ID who should be able to vote, and she got there in time. But how many people wouldn't have done that extra travel or wouldn't have made it back in time. And so we know that it is going to discourage turnout. And I do worry about that. All we can do now on that is to get the word out for voters to make sure they remember to bring it and make sure they have the updated ID that they need.
Coming up next, part two of my conversation with Senator Natasha Marcus. Stay with us.
Read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In part one of my recent conversation with Mecklenburg County State Senator Natasha Marcus, we discussed some of the key issues that will come before the General Assembly this spring during the legislative short session, including K-12 education, child care, and the struggles of state election officials to cope with staff attrition that's been fueled by inadequate resources and harassment from conspiracy theorists. In part two of our chat, we discuss some other important policy debates impacting state government right now, including big problems that have arisen in the state's new e-courts system and some massive increases in premium rates that the insurance industry is seeking approval to impose on owners of manufactured homes. I want to switch gears and talk about our court system and our judiciary. Recently, the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee on Justice and Public Safety was another one you serve on. Earlier this month, you heard how technology that was intended to modernize our courts ain't working very good. The Conference of District Attorneys wants the program paused. This is the new e-court system. It looks like the Administrative Office of the Courts and the Chief Justice want to plow ahead. Talk to us about what's going on there and why maybe a lot of people are concerned about this technology issue.
Right. We heard in that committee some really worrisome testimony from DAs. My DA here in Mecklenburg, Spencer Merriweather, made a really good case for the fact that it is causing major problems with the way they administer justice in Mecklenburg County, which is one of the earlier counties to have to adopt e-courts. It's a good goal. We need to get there for sure. I think everyone agrees on that. But we need to slow it down for this software to work better before we force it on additional counties. I was particularly concerned to hear that in some cases, this new software is disclosing to the public identifying information about victims who are witnesses in a way that makes them unsafe. And that's a huge glitch that is not addressed. I followed up afterwards with District Attorney Spencer Merriweather, and he assured me that that is not fixed yet. So among other things, it is requiring DAs to use more people to do less work in more time. And it's just not efficient, and it's not ready for prime time. So I hope that Administrative Office of the Courts will listen and not continue to force this through.
It looks like right now, at least as soon as April 29th, 10 additional counties are slated to go on with this. Do you have any sense whether any of your colleagues shared some of your concerns about allowing the courts to plow ahead with this?
It was hard to tell. They didn't say much. We have not held any sessions since then. So we will have to wait and see. I hope this isn't a partisan issue where we're, you know, Republicans are just going to do whatever AOC says, because they want to be on the sides of their friends. I hope they will listen to reason. We'll see.
Sure hope so, because it seems like a bipartisan problem.
Again, something that both sides of the aisle would care about.
I want to talk lastly about the issue of mobile homes. There is a new proposal, specifically the North Carolina Rate Bureau has requested, this is a remarkable number, an 83% average rate increase for mobile home fire policies and a 50% jump for mobile home casualty policies over the next 3 years. I assume there probably are some reasons why insurance rates are going up. I mean, obviously, we've got climate crisis, we've got more severe weather. A lot of manufactured homes can be very vulnerable to that, but I wonder if you have any thoughts. I know there's public comment is going to be taking place through the end of the month. Obviously, you're running to be the next state insurance commissioner. I figure you may have some thoughts about this.
Oh, yes. So this hike increase request is part of a pattern that we have seen where there's also a 42% average statewide rate hike currently proposed for all homeowners insurance. So this impacts everyone pretty much no matter where you live. And it is a part of a trend. Now, part of the reasons are climate change and the global reinsurance market, but insurance companies are making record profits And I think one of the issues is that we have an insurance commissioner who is much too close to the insurance companies that he's supposed to be regulating. He refuses to hold the public hearings that the statutes anticipate that previous commissioners of insurance did hold, where you bring insurance companies before in a court-like setting before the commissioner and force them to provide evidence about why they can justify a rate hike, and if so, what it needs to be. This is supposed to be under oath testimony, subject to cross-examination. He's never held one of those hearings. He holds the required public comment hearings that you mentioned, Rob, but there's no back and forth there. That's just the public letting the commissioner know how much this would hurt. We need to have those full public evidentiary hearings that he always skips, so that sense of why a rate would need to jump so very high. He continues to have private meetings with insurance companies each time they ask for a rate hike. And we don't know what they talk about, and we don't know on what basis he sets the higher rate, but he always comes out of those meetings with a higher rate, usually not as high as they request. And he just, like, in effect, trust me, I made you a good deal.
It wouldn't be unlike the Utilities Commission when they consider rate hikes for Duke Energy or the gas company. It's like a court trial. They have a hearing,
right?
There's evidence, there's lawyers. And so that's sort of what you think.
And that is what previous commissioners of insurance, Wayne Goodwood, held these public hearings. And in this case, there isn't a whole board that gets to set the new rate. It is one person. It's the commissioner of insurance sets the maximum rate. And we have a right to know, as the public. We elect our commissioner of insurance for a reason. He's supposed to be advocating for the people, not for the insurance companies. They have the rate bureau to advocate for them. Commissioner of insurance is supposed to be looking out for the people of North Carolina. And without any public hearing, no evidence whatsoever, there's just no transparency. And that's not the way it's supposed to happen. There's also the issue of consent to rate. There's a huge loophole now that's being overused by insurance companies, in my opinion, where they are charging more than the maximum rate that's even set by the Commissioner of Insurance through this loophole that was created by the General Assembly several years ago that's become almost the norm. And I am hoping that we can get a study on how often consent to rate is being used to charge policyholders more than the maximum rate is set by the commissioner, figure out which customers get hit with a consent to rate, because it is, in my opinion, out of control and unfair.
I guess we'll end with a final question of Senator Natasha Marcus. Related to this, we're in this era in which housing has just become so unaffordable for so many people. I presume it's a concern that these insurance rates are just adding to that problem for so many, both renters and homeowners across the state.
Absolutely. Wallets are getting squeezed, and it's difficult to own a home. It's difficult to pay what is charged in rent. And of course, insurance goes into that as well. So it is a pocketbook issue for so many families. And it's important that we have a commissioner of insurance who is going to advocate for the people, not the insurance companies. So it's all part of pocketbook issues that I think voters are going to be looking at when they go to vote this November.
Senator Natasha Marcus of Mecklenburg County, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your work for our state. Please take care. Enjoy the, as best you can, the short session of the General Assembly. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks so much for the time. I appreciate your reporting.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncnewsline.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries wherever you get your podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views, a weekly look at state news, events, and public policy debates produced by North Carolina Newsline. Visit them online at ncnewsline.com.